Welcome to North Square Investments Active Insights Podcast. North Square Investments is dedicated to bringing differentiated active investment strategies to financial advisors and investors through our multi-boutique asset management platform. Today, Mark Goodwin, Chief Executive Officer of North Square Investments, will discuss fixed income investing for capital preservation and the investment approach of C.S. McKee. Brian Allen, Senior Vice President and Portfolio Manager, will provide his insights and outlook for this sector of the market. C.S. McKee is a partner firm in the North Square platform. Mark and Brian, we look forward to your discussion.
Thanks, Diane. As you mentioned, at North Square, we seek out best-in-class active managers for our platform. And our partners at C.S. McKee have a proven, repeatable approach to fixed income investing. Brian, your firm has primarily worked with institutional investors, so financial advisors and individual investors might not be as familiar with C.S. McKee. Can you give us some background on the firm and your investment team?
Sure. C.S. McKee was founded in 1931. We're happily celebrating our 90th year in business. On the fixed income side of the shop, we manage funds across the maturity spectrum under a high quality, high liquidity, and primarily bottom-up investment process. We are 100% investment grade focused for all portfolios, and our goal in this approach is to deliver consistent market outperformance with lower volatility. Behind the scenes, we have a fixed income team comprised of 7 members, 4 portfolio managers who've been with the firm an average of 22 years, 3 securities analysts, including 1 quantitative analyst who they have been with us an average of 7 years. And together we manage 250 or so institutional, primarily institutional accounts, totaling approximately $6.5 billion in assets.
Brian, McKee manages an array of fixed income strategies, but today I'd like to focus on the low duration fixed income strategy, particularly with C.S. McKee now sub-advising the Advisor Shares North Square McKee Core Reserves ETF, ticker HOLD or HOLD. This strategy covers investment-grade corporates, mortgage and asset-backed and government securities that you and your team consider when building the portfolio. Can you talk about how you develop an overall portfolio strategy with an objective to both preserve capital and maximize income given the duration limitations here?
Yes, our low duration, in this case, what we refer to as an enhanced cash strategy, is really the first step up in risk versus a money market fund. It offers the investor the opportunity to earn additional income versus a money fund, primarily by expanding the investment universe, but also maintaining low interest rate and yield curve risk. What little duration risk we take, which typically ranges from 0.5 year to just over 1 year, is determined by forward curve analysis, which is a process for us to determine the break-even rate at various points along the short end of the yield curve and determine where we should best take risk to the extent we take any degree of interest rate or duration risk. Holdings within the fund currently include about a 20% allocation to asset-backed securities. And there we prefer the more liquid issuers, typically credit cards and auto loan and lease deals, and avoid the less liquid, newer securities that have come to market. That's joined by about a 60% allocation to investment-grade credit, where we maintain a fairly thorough and broad diversification among financial, industrial, and utility names. And then finally, about a 20% allocation to treasuries for the most immediate liquidity needs.
Can you talk about the process you use to evaluate your investment universe to develop a workable set of potential investments?
Yes, drawing from our experience and input from the entire fixed income team, we begin by developing an initial framework for portfolio structure based on the aforementioned outlook for market interest rates and what we see as a result of our forward yield curve analysis. Now, we follow that with a review of the relative value of the various sectors that we look at, both on a current and historic basis. Again, try to determine what we think is the break-even in performance for those securities versus an otherwise purely treasury-invested portfolio. And that step leads to our sector weightings, as well as informing where exactly along the short end of the yield curve we'll position ourselves. Personally speaking, I have a particular bias towards the asset-backed sector. I'm primarily responsible for securitized assets. And frankly, those securities, especially in the short end of the curve, work in a number of ways to generate return that you structurally won't see in your typical corporate agency or even treasury security. Asset-backs, even the most liquid and high-quality ones that we favor, out-yield short-term corporate issues. It's not unusual to see AAA-rated asset-backs with equal or higher yield than a single-A-rated credit. And add to that the fact that when buying, say, a single or AA-rated asset-backed security, as it pays down over time, there's a natural structural bias towards improving credit rating. So you've got the benefit of higher yield to begin with. You roll down the yield curve, which improves pricing on the bond in overall terms. And then you've got ever-improving credit quality underneath the bond. So it really does fuel returns. It makes this sector what we think typically is the most attractive in that part of the curve.
Moving forward, once you have your workable investment set, how do you then make specific security selections and allocate those positions as you build portfolios so you don't have, you know, 100% asset backs, for example?
Yeah, the final determination of portfolio construction, the individual security holdings and position sizes, also a very important ingredient. Really incorporate all those previously mentioned factors in terms of duration, curve, interest rate risk, spread risk, and takes scenario testing to what we deem to be extreme levels. We've certainly found that when it comes to weighing the relative attractiveness of one bond or one sector versus the other, you can become a little too enamored with a particular security, or of greater concern is the fact that you may like, on a standalone basis, you may find corporates attractive, you may find TIPS attractive, or callable securities, all of which, based on historic measures, may look attractive, but when combined in a total portfolio setting, leave you open to negative economic surprises, sharp jumps in volatility, a quick rally in treasury rates. So the final step in making specific security selections really involves shocking the portfolio to what we think are relative extreme levels in terms of rates and volatility, changes in credit quality and liquidity, as we've seen in the last few years, very important consideration. We do all that to really come down to a final portfolio structure.
So where would you say the greater impact will come onto your portfolio performance, from security selection or asset allocation over time?
Now, while both are obviously very important components, especially in the short end of the a yield curve and for a portfolio such as this, I'd have to give a slight nod to sector allocation. We're operating within a sort of narrow duration window and limiting ourselves to a high-quality investment universe. So most relative value will show up at the sector level. And provided we don't make any mistakes at the security selection level, we're really going to see most of the performance driven from how well we've made the decision regarding sector allocation.
Thanks, Brian. We've seen a great deal of monetary and fiscal stimulus, investment markets at high valuations, and much higher inflation. You know, over the past 30 days or so, we've seen the 10-year Treasury bounce all over the place, forward and backward. Where do you see the current economic environment, and what's your outlook for the economy and fixed income markets in 2022?
Yeah, we generally remain constructive on growth headed into next year, almost regardless of what the Fed does. Payroll growth, as we've seen again this morning with some noise in this last report, but generally speaking, payroll growth has accelerated to well above historic averages, 2 to 3 times what you typically see in monthly gains. The participation rate is finally beginning to move up. We've got a ways to go to get to pre-pandemic levels, but nonetheless, we're on the right track there. Wage growth continues to be strong, and whether we need it or not, a fair amount of fiscal stimulus is headed our way. So the demand side of the equation is certainly great in terms of from a growth point of view. As a result, though, the balance between growth and inflation, a little bit more concerned about not only the rate of inflation, but the market's view, ever-changing view of inflation. And as much as the Fed has tried to calm those concerns from May, June of this year up through about a month ago, early November, they are finally coming to the realization, much as the market has instructed them to do so, that inflation really isn't transitory by historic standards, and that they, in fact, may be a little behind the curve with respect to removing stimulus. As a result, they've talked about tapering faster than they had originally discussed. We think the market now discounts at least two rate hikes in 2022, which I believe is an accurate assessment. We will see a peak in inflation early next year, and it will trail off certainly a year from now when inflation is measured month by month or even on a year-over-year basis. We'll have put most of what we hope was the COVID influence on the economy in the rearview mirror, and therefore year-over-year numbers will become a little more digestible and comfortable. And as a result, the Fed will play it slow, raise rates only twice along the way there. The only thing that's really concerning is beyond 2022. Again, the market's very fully discounted what's likely to be the Fed response next year, but frankly has gone to sleep on what may occur should inflation prove to be a little stickier than even what I've just outlined. And a terminal Fed funds rate of 1.5% is still negative in real terms. And it's, again, the market's frankly betting 100% on the fact that just a few slight adjustments from the Fed will do more than enough to correct the imbalances in place right now.
Given this inflationary backdrop and rising rate environment, how does this view impact the way you're positioning the portfolio strategy today?
Well, with the market discounting what we believe is the most likely scenario over the next 12 months, and given our focus on such a short part of the yield curve, we are positioned, we think, as we should be, given the outlook. We're now beginning to move duration very gradually a little longer from its about 0.6-year level. We also have, as the opportunities present themselves, bought or added more callable and adjustable rate securities as well. So we're finding ways to improve portfolio yield without taking undue duration risk, and certainly not going beyond what the market is giving us in terms of reasonable opportunities.
Where would you say you're finding the best opportunities in today's market?
Definitely in the ABS market. Again, take away my own familiarity and personal bias in that space, but certainly those securities come to market with more attractive yield profiles and risk profiles than we find in other sectors. But we've also seen an uptick to a small degree, but an uptick in corporate space with respect to floating rate offerings. And there again, we like that structure in a portfolio like this, where principal preservation in our mind is still the first priority, and then generating yield a close second. But those two areas in particular offer us, I think, the ideal trade-off between low duration, liquidity, and yield.
Changing gears for a minute, many investors use passive investment strategies for portfolio exposure in fixed income. Do you see advantages from C.S. McKee's style of active management for investors' fixed income exposure in what could be a more volatile environment over the next 12 to 24 months?
Yeah, though the trend to passive investing continues, that's true in equity and many areas in the fixed income markets. Core fixed income is one area where active management can and does offer consistent benchmark outperformance, lower volatility, or a combination of the two. That's really our focus across the board for all of our products, be it the very shortest maturities out to a full aggregate 1 to 30-year benchmark. Now, the one caveat to that is that many firms, if while the percentage of firms that outperform a core benchmark is higher in this space than in frankly against any other fixed income or equity benchmark, many firms simply assume a greater degree of credit risk as a means for outperformance. Again, that tends to generate attractive long-term average returns, but within the context of a diversified portfolio, doesn't provide much by way of diversification. So the firm's focus historically has always been fixed income as a complement to higher beta, higher risk holdings, and therefore the quality bias runs through everything we do, and our pursuit of higher returns, higher yield, doesn't rely on credit risk, but in uncovering other liquid securities that offer both yield and diversification.
Brian, a final question. How do you see an active, low-duration fixed income strategy being best positioned in the diversified portfolio of an individual investor?
Yeah, I think for that particular investor, a product such as Hold is really ideally suited for that portion of their total portfolio that should be allocated to stable liquid reserves. Money markets typically fill that role, but as we all know, in the last year plus, most money market funds offer as close to zero in terms of yield than we've ever seen. So the cost of maintaining liquidity on ready reserves is fairly high, especially when measured in inflation-adjusted terms. So a product that offers somewhat higher yield than money market funds and doesn't take excessive duration or yield curve risk really makes sense for sort of holdings that most investors should maintain. The old mantra, 6 months worth of expenses or a year's worth of expenses in a stable performing fund sounds, those are the ideal types of investments that investors will find are met in the Hold product.
Makes a lot of sense. Brian, thank you for joining me again today. It's been a great discussion as always.
Thank you. Always a pleasure to discuss our growing suite of products.
Thank you for tuning in to our North Square Active Insights podcast. For more information on North Square Investments, our partners, and investment solutions, please visit our website at www.northsquareinvest.com. Nothing contained in this communication constitutes tax, legal, or investment advice. Investors must consult their tax advisor or legal counsel for advice and information concerning their particular situation. This podcast contains certain statements that may include forward-looking statements. Although C.S. McKee believes that the expectations reflected in these forward-looking statements are reasonable, they do involve assumptions, risks, and uncertainties, and these expectations may prove to be incorrect. Actual events could differ materially from those anticipated in these forward-looking statements as a result of a variety of factors. You should not place undue reliance on these forward-looking statements. This podcast reflects C.S. McKee's views and opinions as of the date herein, which are subject to change at any time based on market and other conditions. We disclaim any responsibility to update these views. These views should not be relied on as investment advice or an indication of trading intention.